Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Hey Joe edition, as we discuss Joe Burrow, other NFL draft prospects, and what the data says about the Bengals roster with Pro Football Focus analyst Austin Gale. We'll discuss the draft, free agency, and Sunday's Super Bowl matchup between the Chiefs and 49ers. And as the NFL celebrates its 100th season, we'll do fun facts with one of two Bengals selected to the NFL's all-time team, offensive lineman Anthony Munoz. All of that is straight ahead, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since the movie Parasite. Parasite is a Korean movie that won the top prize and supposedly received an 8-minute standing ovation at the Cannes Film Festival. And it's one of 9 Best Picture nominees for this year's Academy Awards. Despite the name, it's not a horror movie. It's a dark comedy with some chilling twists. And in my opinion, it's outstanding. So, if you don't mind movies with subtitles, I highly recommend Parasite. Now let's get to football. The most influential source of advanced statistics in football is the website Pro Football Focus. It was founded in the United Kingdom more than a decade ago, and then in 2014, former Bengals wide receiver Chris Collinsworth purchased a majority stake in the company and moved it to downtown Cincinnati. PFF now has more than 80 full-time employees and provides data to all 32 NFL teams, as well as fans, fantasy football players, and people who are into the NFL draft. This week, I met with one of PFF's top analysts about the draft, free agency, and Sunday Super Bowl. We are hanging out in a downtown coffee shop with Pro Football Focus analyst Austin Gale. There's construction going on at PFF in downtown Cincinnati, so we moved a few blocks away to talk about the draft, about the Senior Bowl, and about the Bengals. Let's start with a topic that's on every Bengals fan's mind, Joe Burrow. He had the highest rated season by a college quarterback ever in the Pro Football Focus era, and we've all seen the traditional stats, 76% completion percentage, 60 touchdown passes, 6 interceptions, but how about some of the Pro Football Focus stats that demonstrate just how great he was this year?
Yeah, I mean, to start with that highest graded season ever in the PFF college era, that's dating back to 2014 when we first started grading college quarterbacks. And what really stands out for me is that that grade came against SEC competition. You look at this list of top 15 seasons in the college era, so much of it is in the group of five, so much of it is in the Big 12. Joe Burrow is one of two quarterbacks in the top 15 from the SEC. Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa. That's what's really incredible for me, that level of competition. Doing it against that level of competition is incredible. And as for the stats that kind of go into that, really how you grade well in PFF system at the college and NFL level is being accurate. Joe Burrow is the most accurate college quarterback we've ever seen. Looking at throws of 10-plus air yards, he was accurate on target over 65% of the time. The previous record was Baker Mayfield at 56% of the time. This is absurd. You just don't see this level of accuracy at the college level. Yes, he's an older prospect. Yes, he's kind of, you know, doing it in a very good system that Joe Brady had, but man, this guy is really accurate, and that's really what put him in another level from a grading perspective.
We have coffee beans being ground in the background. I'm glad you brought up that 10 air yards statistic, because so many times in college football we see these ridiculous completion percentages, and it's because they're throwing bubble screens, they're throwing sideways. Joe Burrow pressed the ball down the field.
Oh, absolutely. And talking to NFL guys, scouts and analysts, and also media, you know, Daniel Jeremiah, guys from The Athletic, they love what PFF data can do and what we can see by separating that accuracy out. Remove screens, remove play action, look at these throws on standard dropbacks, 10 plus yards down the football field, and how does he grade out? Joe Burrow, hands down, the best quarterback in college football on these NFL-level throws. And you go beyond that, we can sort and look at tight window throws. When he's fitting it in to tight windows, how on target is he? Again, the most accurate quarterback in college football. And talking to our data scientists here at PFF, George Shahuri and Eric Eager, these guys see that accuracy at the college level, on target percentage, are things that translate the most frequently to the NFL level. So being accurate is so important, and why it really ranks high in our grading system.
Our guest is Austin Gale, an analyst from Pro Football Focus. Are there any red flags where Joe Burrow is concerned?
Yeah, I think there's two that come to mind. One, it's the age. He's an older prospect. I think he'll turn 24 here pretty soon. And that's a concern because you're going against some younger guys. And like that experience and that age and that maturity plays a factor in how you develop. You compare him to a guy like Tua Tagovailoa, who's had NFL-ready pocket presence since he was 18 years old. With Joe Burrow, that can be a little bit of a concern. It's not Brandon Whedon level of concerns. He was coming out like 28, 29, but age is something. If you had to pull a red flag on a guy who's going to be the number one overall pick come 2020 draft, that is where I kind of sit. The other one is the system. I mean, Joe Brady, there's a reason he's coaching in the NFL right now. He put together a system that really elevated Joe Burrow's game. I think, however, accuracy, regardless of system, shows up when you're accurate, not with the supporting cast or those things. That's why we really feel comfortable pushing those red flags a bit away, because if you're as accurate as Joe Burrow is, I think that's really what's most impressive.
How does Joe Burrow compare to Tua or Justin Herbert or the other quarterbacks in this draft?
Yeah, in this draft, he's the best. In all the drafts that we've really covered, I think he's the best. He's the best college football quarterback from a prospect perspective we've ever really seen. And I think the comparisons between Tua and Joe Burrow, it's hard to not bring up the injury. There's so much injury risk with Tua Tagovailoa. I think he's a great quarterback. He's the only quarterback in PFF college era that's graded above 90.0 in back-to-back seasons. That's how good this guy is. The injury risk, however, puts him a tier below. Also, doesn't have the arm talent that Joe Burrow has. There's some inconsistency. He's not as accurate. No one is as accurate as Joe Burrow. And as for Justin Herbert, the concerns, the red flags in his game really are he does not rise to the occasion against good competition. I mean, I think he's not a gamer in that regard. I think he grades well on air. He looks great in pads and in shorts and things like 6'6", great hair, good-looking kid, very smart dude. But when you look at games against Utah, you look at games against Arizona, these games were like, hey, this is a must-win. The Auburn game, to start the season, he does not rise to the occasion. He's not the reason these Oregon Ducks win. But with Burrow, he's the reason. I think that's why you feel more comfortable translating him to the next level.
Does PFF have a great hair metric?
We don't, but I mean, if I had to put Justin Herbert's on a scale, it's above 90. I mean, I saw him at the Senior Bowl. This guy's got a good head of hair.
We're talking to Austin Gale from Pro Football Focus. Is there a case to be made for Chase Young, number one overall?
Part of me wants to kind of dodge this a bit, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. No, there is not a case for Chase Young to go number one overall. One, we think Joe Burrow is the better prospect. Two, positional value matters. It's something you cannot ignore in the NFL. The quarterback position moves the needle more than any other position on the football field. It's the pitcher of the NFL, but he plays every game, unlike your number one pitcher in baseball. I mean, the positional value is, again, very similar to goalies in the NHL. Like, you just don't get better. Looking at PFF's wins above replacement metric, WAR, and something that we're selling to NFL and college teams now these days, looks at positional value and sees how that weighs in. The quarterback position oftentimes is 8 to 10 times better than the best edge defender in football. That's like the needle movers are quarterbacks. A single defensive player does not move the needle in the upward direction, even if he is this generational talent everyone thinks he is, like a quarterback does, even an average quarterback does, compared to a guy like Chase Young.
And that shows in the number one overall pick in the draft. In 4 out of the last 5 years, it's been a quarterback. Kyler Murray last year, Baker Mayfield 2 years ago. You had Myles Garrett in there the year before that, but then Jared Goff and Jameis Winston. How does Joe Burrow compare to those guys?
Again, and I don't say this lightly, but he is the best college football prospect we've seen. Better than Baker Mayfield. And PFF was high on Baker Mayfield the October before that draft. Really loved what he did. And reason why we like Baker Mayfield were a lot of the same reasons we like Joe Burrow. Good inside and outside of structure. Very accurate with the football on these NFL throws. What's different is Joe Burrow did it better. Better from an accuracy standpoint. Better on those NFL throws. And he did it against SEC competition. I don't say that lightly. Like I said, of the top 15 graded seasons at the college level. I want to say there's only two players in that top 15 that are from the SEC. It's Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa. I think other guys like Will Greer, Big 12, Mason Fine, Group of Five, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray. Those other guys are going against what is, unquestionably lower level competition. SEC is a different breed. More NFL talent comes out of that conference than any other conference. I think that's why we're really so high on Burrow.
We're talking to Austin Gale from Pro Football Focus. You were in Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl. Let's look at this from a Bengals perspective. Who are some of the guys that would be a good fit for Cincinnati?
Yeah, I think this is a good question. I think there's some offensive line help down in Mobile that really impressed me. Jonah Jackson, the guard out of Ohio State, who's a Rutgers transfer. So not a lot of people knew about him until he went to Ohio State. Then he goes to Ohio State, really, really impresses down in Mobile. Guy is, like, really top-heavy. Looks like he's got a mini-fridge under his shoulder pads. And you're kind of scared of his lower half, but he's got great balance. Great in pass protection, a mauler in the run game. I think Bengals need offensive line help. I know they have Jonah Williams coming back, but they still need offensive line help. I think Jonah Jackson was a name that stood out for me. Others there, this receiving class is deep, and it's very good. Michael Pittman Jr. of USC is a guy I think in the second round starts to make sense for the Cincinnati Bengals. KJ Hill, Ohio State, had himself a week in Mobile, and Denzel Mims of Baylor. All three of those guys broke our top 100 after the Senior Bowl. I mean, those guys are really special players as well.
So there were guys that were not at the Senior Bowl for a wide variety of reasons, maybe eligible juniors, things like that. So when we're looking at the number one pick in the second round, number 33 overall, who do you think might be there? Who are some of the guys that you think the Bengals could be possibly targeting at number 33?
Yeah, I think I jumped to the cornerback position. I think after Jeffrey Okuda, who I think is a lock for the top five, the Ohio State kid, former five-star, dude's got all the length, athleticism, ball production off the charts. Well, after that, the cornerback position is going to go quick because there's not a lot of true number one guys. Christian Fulton accepted his invite to the Senior Bowl but did not attend for reasons I think that were unclear. I think because he knows he's going high in this draft. I think there's a chance because I think he's not super scheme versatile, wants to play in kind of a man-heavy scheme. I think he could have success at the top of round two. He's a guy that I like. And then as for others, like Justin Jefferson, if you wanted to pair Joe Burrow with this guy out of LSU, Justin Jefferson, he's very close to Tyler Boyd. I think they're very similar players in that they can play inside and outside, but maybe are better off on the inside. I think you have Tyler Boyd, Justin Jefferson, two guys that catch everything, create separation against zone, very crafty, mindful receivers. You start to get even better with Joe Burrow in year one.
Did the Bengals coaching staff make an impression in any way with how they handled the South roster at the Senior Bowl?
Yes. Because I think they handled the practices better. I think you saw a handful of things on Twitter and other analysts say, like, why are the Detroit Lions doing some of the things they do? They were doing blocking drills and things like that. They didn't really give as many opportunities as the Bengals coaching staff did to see how these players performed in one-on-ones. You talk to scouts, you talk to media, you talk to the players. One-on-ones are where the money is made. I talked to KJ Hill, the Ohio State receiver, right after practice one. He said, I know I need to be good in the one-on-ones. That's all I'm really focusing on this week. And I think the Bengals did a really good job of putting so many one-on-ones on tape so they could really evaluate the players as well.
We're talking to Austin Gale from Pro Football Focus. I want to turn the clock back to my first year as the Bengals announcer, 2011. Early in that season, Pro Football Focus had a story where they referred to Geno Atkins as a secret superstar. And I remember thinking at the time, nobody was saying that yet about Geno Atkins. At the end of that year, he went to the first of his eight Pro Bowls. So I really thought that Pro Football Focus helped get the word out that Geno Atkins was going to be a great player. Are there any breakout candidates on the Bengals' current roster?
I have a handful. I mean, I do like a handful of the younger players on the Bengals roster. I'm still going to say Carl Lawson. If this guy can just get healthy, I do think he's one of the better pass rushers in the NFL. Throw arm length out the window. I'm telling you, this guy has it. I think in the small sample sizes, he's graded very well for PFF. Used effectively and healthy, he's a breakout candidate for me. And Jonah Williams. I mean, Jonah Williams didn't get a chance to play this year due to an injury, which you did not expect coming out of Alabama. This guy was a workhorse, played a ton of snaps for the Crimson Tide. We loved his tape coming out. Again, throw the arm length out the window. He was asked that question a handful of times in the draft process, but super smart kid. I don't know if you know this, but I had a chance to talk to him before the Bengals did draft him. This guy charts every single player that he's about to go against, how they win his pass rushers, outside, inside, bull rush, and creates an Excel and a spider chart of how they win and studies that before games. This guy's PFF legend. I mean, we love what this guy does from a data perspective. He uses data to analyze and get better on film. He's so smart between the ears that I just can't imagine this guy not having a good NFL career, because he's just too smart, athletically gifted, and great production at Alabama.
When his career is over, he could be working with you in downtown Cincinnati.
Absolutely. I would welcome it. I mean, I probably interview 25 to 50 prospects every year. Jonah Williams, in the 5-6 years I've been doing this, is the best interview I've ever had. He's just such a smart guy, and smart is very important at the offensive line position. You need tackles and even guard centers to be smart, to understand protections, different play calls, etc. But he's on another level of smart compared to the other guys I talked to. I think Jonah Williams, again, that commitment to getting better. This guy wants to be the best in the league and has all the tools, mind, physical, all that stuff, to really be it for sure.
Let me follow up on the offensive line. Pro Football Focus ranked all 32 offensive lines. The two Super Bowl teams, I was surprised, are not at the top. San Francisco number 14, Kansas City number 16. So I guess if you have a great quarterback like Patrick Mahomes or an incredible scheme like San Francisco, you can get around that a little bit. But the Bengals were number 30. The only two teams that graded lower were the Rams and the Dolphins. When you look at the Bengals' offensive line, you plug in Jonah Williams at left tackle next year. They gave a contract extension to Trey Hopkins, so he'll be the center. Are they good enough anywhere else on the offensive line?
I would argue no, and I know that's aggressive, and throwing somewhat level of shade at John Miller, Billy Price, the kid at Michael Jordan of Ohio State, right tackle Bobby Hart has not graded well for us. He has not graded well for us really in his entire NFL career. And seeing when they did give him that contract extension last year, I mean, I remember being in the office, real head scratchers across the board. Did not see that coming. And I think the problem with that is, I think, you know, you mentioned the Super Bowl teams. Good quarterbacks don't welcome pressure like bad quarterbacks. We've seen that sacks and pressures and pressure rate can often be a quarterback stat more often than it is an offensive line stat. We talk to current and former NFL offensive linemen, and they bang the table for that kind of data analysis, knowing that there are quarterbacks like Deshaun Watson that welcome pressure, bring pressure more often than, you know, a Patrick Mahomes or things like that. But I will say this, Joe Burrow, if he does actually get picked number one overall, which I think all signs point to, he is very good under pressure and he does not welcome it. That's why I feel comfortable with the Bengals maybe going other directions at the top of the draft and maybe even in free agency, because Joe Burrow is a guy that does not make an average offensive line look worse. He's a guy that makes an average offensive line look so much better with what he does inside, outside of structure in terms of going through his progressions, etc.
We're picking the brain of Austin Gale from Pro Football Focus. Based on PFF data, where else should the Bengals be looking to upgrade?
Cornerback. Because, I mean, you cannot have enough good cornerbacks in this league. And I know William Jackson had a very good season in 2017. But what we've seen at PFF, cornerback is the second most valuable position on the football field right behind quarterback. It's distant after quarterback, but it is number two. But it's also one of the most volatile. Year over year, you rarely see cornerbacks like Darrell Revis, Patrick Peterson, Jalen Ramsey have the consistency from a production standpoint. Because, and a lot of this is because, a bad play at cornerback is a touchdown. A bad play at tackle is just a sack. And I think you see that production, that volatility in those big plays have a factor in really good cornerbacks dropping year or whatever it may be. But again, stepping away from the volatility of the position, the value of position rings true. And I think there are a ton of cornerbacks in this class. There's also some cornerbacks on the free agent market that the Bengals should be looking to grab, because your defense gets better with coverage. You look at the Chiefs' defense. They're playing in the Super Bowl. Big question mark in the offseason is, can their defense get better? It was not because they added to the pass rush. It was because guys like Tyrann Mathieu, Juan Thornhill, and stepping up from Kendall Fuller, that made this defense better, made the quarterback hold the ball longer, and therefore now they're, you know, up there with a top 16 defense going into the Super Bowl with a really good offense.
Now, this is really interesting to me, because when I asked the question, where does the data show the Bengals need to upgrade, you said cornerback. Every Bengals fan listening would have anticipated you would have said linebacker.
So I'll say it right now. Off-ball linebacker is not a valuable position on the football field. It's not one of which that you need to fill necessarily and ignore positional value, ignore, you know, the best player available and fill that need, largely because they don't have as big of an impact on coverage and they do not rush the passer. They are oftentimes picked on schematically. It's hard to, you know, there are coverage linebackers in the NFL that make a difference. One was Luke Kuechly, I know a Cincinnati guy, and another one is now Bobby Wagner. After that, it's a scrum. There are not a ton of off-ball linebackers that really are difference makers. And for that reason, trying to fill that need at the top of day two would be horrendous. I mean, it's close to the running back position from a positional value standpoint. That's why having a good cornerback that doesn't get beat deep is more important, in my opinion, than off-ball linebacker. Fill that position in the later rounds. Fill that position in free agency with bargain deals.
Talking to Austin Gale, you mentioned free agency, so let's get to that next. The Bengals have not historically gone after the highest-priced free agents. Maybe that changes this year. We'll see. But are there any current free agents, especially mid-level guys, who could help?
I think a name to keep an eye on, and I know he's mulling retirement a bit, but is Anthony Costanzo. He's played a lot of left tackle in his career, but if he does not want to hang up the cleats and he wants to play right tackle potentially for the Bengals, I think that's a guy that could come at a relative bargain. He's not going to ask for a long-term deal, obviously. He's a name that I like as a free agent in the offseason. I think it's hard not to bring up the big-name guys, the guys that will draw a lot of money, but if they can dig through the couches and find enough money to bring in Byron Jones of the Dallas Cowboys, that's a difference-maker at the cornerback position. I think you're better off spending, too, at certain positions, like cornerback, like offensive line. We see at PFF, filling needs with rookies rarely pans out. The only position that we see like rookies really excel at out of the gate is running back, for obvious reasons. It's a position that ages quickly. But offensive line, you don't really get plus production until year two, year three. You don't get plus production from cornerbacks, even sometimes receivers, until those years as well. So looking at free agency to fill at, you know, positions of need is more important than looking to fill positions of need in the draft. So I think offensive line, maybe finding a tackle opposite of Jonah Williams, and then cornerback again, dig through these guys. Anthony Harris, the safety of Minnesota, too, pair him up with Wake Forest guys, second year.
Jesse Bates,
yeah, with Jesse Bates. Pair him up with Jesse Bates. Invest in the defensive backs. Invest in the offensive line if you can find them, interior and exterior.
All right, this has been excellent. Let's get to Sunday. Super Bowl, San Francisco, Kansas City. Who wins and why?
I'm going the Kansas City Chiefs. I think the better quarterbacks, the better passing offenses win in the postseason, and that's really what we've seen. I think the San Francisco 49ers are fantastic. We've seen them get into a shootout with the New Orleans Saints and win, but this Chiefs team goes up, they can go up quickly, and I don't think they let their foot off the gas pedal. Look at this Houston Texans game. They come back in that game. I think they're up 20 points at a certain point. They continue to throw the football. They continue to push down the field. Aggressiveness, again, aggressiveness, passing the football really wins in the postseason. I think Andy Reid is calling masterfully down on the sideline. Patrick Mahomes playing some of his best football of his career. Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, mismatches across the board. This 49ers team, if they get a lead, keeps this close. But I think if Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs find a way to go up 14, go up even 10 early in this game, and they keep the gas pedal down, I think this Chiefs team wins pretty handily. I'm big on the Chiefs.
Wow, now I'm thinking San Francisco's running game at least gives them a chance to keep Mahomes off the field enough. He's still going to throw three touchdown passes, but maybe you can prevent him from throwing four or five by holding on to the ball for 35 minutes.
No, and I would agree with you. So the Chiefs have the 30th ranked run defense in EPA per play. They're 32nd against outside zone. The 49ers are licking their chops at this defense. However, you get Patrick Mahomes the ball first, and running the football, though effective, takes time. Piece by piece, time of possession, those things. And with more opportunity comes randomness of turnovers and things like that. You miss a play when a run-heavy offense, and then Patrick Mahomes comes by and scores 7 in 2 minutes. I think that's what makes things difficult to lean on this run game. But again, San Francisco's in this game for a reason. They've been able to dominate the trenches all year long, offensively and defensively. It's up to Kansas City. Again, the way they win this game is score early. If they don't, I think San Francisco can really keep the, you know, push down on them and run through them and win this game.
This has been awesome. I can't thank you enough. I was in on Pro Football Focus early, and I read it religiously. For those who do not subscribe, here's your opportunity to tell them why they should.
Yeah, I mean, go to PFF.com. Even if you're not a subscriber, we do come out with a ton of content every day that's covering NFL, college football, betting, fantasy football. And if you do subscribe, that's where you really unlock like the advanced statistics, the grades, the predictive power that PFF brings to the table, like highlighting breakout candidates or picking who's going to win the Super Bowl. I really do think what PFF offers within their subscription makes you a smarter, better NFL fan, regardless of interest, whether you're just trying to figure out who's the Bengals going to take or who should they take or playing fantasy football. There's a lot to offer from PFF.
Appreciate your time.
Of course. Thank you.
My thanks to Austin, and you can follow him on Twitter at PFF_AustinGale. Again, that's PFF underscore Austin Gale, and he spells his last name G-A-Y-L-E. In celebration of the NFL's 100th season, the league unveiled an all-time team, and two Bengals were selected. Paul Brown was one of 10 head coaches, and Anthony Munoz was among the 100 players selected. Anthony is widely considered to be the greatest offensive lineman in pro football history. He was an 11-time Pro Bowler, the starting left tackle on both of the Bengals Super Bowl teams, and a first ballot Hall of Famer. Perhaps you knew all of that. But in this Fun Facts conversation, you might learn something new about the greatest player in franchise history. Time for some fantastic fun facts with Hall of Famer Anthony Munoz. And let's start with something fun for this one. Do you have the gold Hall of Fame jacket at home, or do they keep those in a closet in Canton?
It is in my closet at home. So, yes, I have it hanging with all my other sport coats and suits in my closet. So I have control of it.
Do you ever let anybody try that on, or is that a strict no-no?
I have not actually let anybody try. Nobody's asked, so I haven't been faced with saying no to anybody.
All right, let's turn the clock back a little bit. There's a picture of you on the internet as a 12-year-old little leaguer, and you are about a foot taller than your teammates. You're as tall as your coach. Were you comfortable being the biggest kid, or were you self-conscious about your size?
Well, I think my family really made it comfortable for me. I mean, there's kids are kids, so you know, kids are going to say things when they see your feet twice as big as theirs. But for the most part, I'd have to say I was pretty comfortable. You know, it's funny you mentioned that Little League picture. My mom actually had to sew some extra material so I could keep my jersey tucked in. But yeah, it was. You know, I thought it was kind of cool at times. Most of the times, I really thought it was nice that I was large because. My friends, my really close friends, really it didn't matter that I was, you know, head taller than them. They accepted me just as a friend.
We're doing fun facts with Anthony Munoz. Is it true, though, that you were too big to play youth football as a kid?
I was. I would have never met the height and weight restrictions, so I never really tried because I knew that I wouldn't be able to. So, really, baseball is my first love, and you know, the extent of my football playing days before I started playing organized, which was flag football. Was just on our home field, and that was the street in front of our house. So it was one of those things where, you know, I heard that I really couldn't because of my size, so I really didn't make that attempt to go play.
You mentioned baseball. You went to USC, and some people might not realize that you were a pitcher on the 1978 team that won a national championship or the College World Series. You strike me as a closer. How are you used, and what did you throw?
I didn't play my freshman year because of injury, so that was actually my sophomore year at school there. Because it was my first year, a lot of, I'm going to admit, you know, I don't have an ego, it was mop-up jobs. And, you know, so I got one win. I got to pitch about 11 innings that year. The year, as you mentioned, we won the World Series, and we had four guys that were in double-figure wins that year. So, you know, I was thrilled to get that many innings that year.
Anthony, your college football career was severely limited in terms of games played by knee injuries. You had three surgical procedures on your knees at USC. Did you ever think this football thing just isn't meant to be?
You know what? I really didn't. Even that third knee operation, I'm laying in the bed the day after that operation, and I'm doing a live interview, in fact, with NBC, and it was Bryant Gumbel. And he asked me that same question the day after my third knee operation, when is it enough? When are you going to give it up? And even then, I said, I still have the passion and desire to come back at least one more time because I wanted to play in the Rose Bowl. We played in two up to that time, and I hadn't played in one. So it really never entered my mind that, man, this is crazy. It's my third one. Let's find something else to do. I was determined to come back and just give it one more shot.
You succeeded. You came back and played in that Rose Bowl, and that was one of the reasons why the Bengals were willing to take you with a third pick in the 1980 draft. But just to make sure your knee was okay, they sent Forrest Gregg out to work you out. Describe what happened.
Well, anybody that's followed the NFL, especially the Green Bay Packers, knows about Forrest Gregg. I mean, he was an all-pro at guard and tackle, Hall of Fame offensive tackle. I knew at the time, Vince Lombardi's last book, he said that Forrest was the finest player he ever coached. Now here's a guy coming to work me out, a Hall of Fame tackle. He wants to see, you know, where I am physically after that third knee operation and playing that game. So I was going to go 100% on everything he asked me to do, and it was for about an hour and a half. And he was putting me through, a great workout. And finally at the end, he said, okay, I'm going to make a few moves as a defensive end. You just react. So I said, man, I got to watch the fakes. Because he was early 40s and still capable of moving a little bit. He actually faked outside and darted inside. And, of course, I took that step out and came back in. And one of the things that I did learn at USC, cutting edge with Hudson Houck, we used our hands a lot. Run blocking, pass blocking, so the punch was, very instrumental in our technique. Didn't have a whole lot of game experience with it, but a lot of camp experience. And he went inside, and I planted both hands, just perfectly into his chest, and I extended. And as he went down, my heart just dropped. He literally hit the ground, and the back of his head kind of hit first. And I stood over him, and I apologized, and I extended my hand, and he basically looked up. And he kind of chuckled and said, no problem, that's all right. And I said, man, thank you. And, it was one of those things where I needed to show him that I could still, move. And then I'd come back completely from that third knee operation.
We're doing fun facts with Anthony Munoz. Most offensive linemen don't have career stats, but you had 7 catches with the Bengals, including 4 for touchdowns. Do you remember when the coaches first decided to put in a passing play for you?
I sure do. In fact, we had a rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback. And Sam Weiss's first year, we started to put extra linemen in and 2 big linemen at tight end, short yards, goal line. And, of course, our goal line with the big guys, it was called the Weeby formation because Weeby scoring when we get in that formation. I got to go back a little bit and really give the person the credit that deserves the credit for me catching those passes, because on Monday after our run, our lift, and viewing tapes, the old lineman would stay after, and we'd have our fat man football game. And, of course, my quarterback all the time, it was the old guys against the young guys, was Max Montoya. So, and we would play right outside of the coaches' windows, on that it's old spinny field. And, Max and I would have fun taking those young linemen apart, with our, Montoya to Munoz connection. But it was Sam's rookie year, and he started putting big guys at the tight end, but all of a sudden saying, okay, we're going to start running some pass plays. And that first catch, if I remember correctly, I was a primary receiver, and we had to score to take it into overtime. And I'm thinking, this is crazy. This guy isn't going to last long in the NFL coaching like that. But, Kenny Anderson was hurt, and we had a, big left-hander rookie at quarterback. And, I remember it like it was yesterday. And, in fact, part of the play was, fake halfback bounce 28 pass or something like that where I hit my guy and go. And so, he made it fun because after that, every week we had a play-in where I was going to, go out for a pass. Not that we ran it every time, but I did get a chance to catch 4 touchdowns.
I assume this did not happen from catching the football, but you have a messed up little finger that points sideways. Did it happen in a specific incident or just the wear and tear of all those years on the O-line?
It's just over the years. It happened, and you just, every week you just tape your, I'd tape my fingers up, and then all of a sudden I retired, and, you kind of reassess your hands and your fingers, and you look, and you go, oh, my goodness, it's not going the way it started out when I first got in the NFL, but, because everything we did was with our hands and, run blocking, you're punching, and guys are coming to you and pass blocking, you're trying to punch them. So you're hitting face masks, you're hitting shoulder pads, you're hitting just about everything. So it happened from the years and years. And a lot of people ask me, was it one specific play? Was it one specific game? And with that pinky, no, it was an accumulation.
All right, a couple more fun facts with Anthony Munoz. If you look at the cast of the 1983 movie, The Right Stuff, about the Mercury 7 astronauts, it includes Scott Glenn, Ed Harris, Dennis Quaid, and Anthony Munoz as Gonzalez. How did that happen?
That was, Super Bowl 16. I had my elbow cleaned out, my right elbow. I had some bone spurs, and the doctor that cleaned it out was the same doctor who did all 3 of my knee operations in college. He was the orthopedic surgeon for the Raiders located in Oakland, but his office was in Beverly Hills, and he was known as the orthopedic surgeon for the movie stars. And we had a blast because I would go in on, saw him a lot in 3 years, and, I got to listen to the Gabor sister on the phone when we were in the examining room as he was talking to him, got to meet Sylvester Stallone, and, Bubba Smith was actually in there, former, NFL football player. And my final examination with my elbow that year, we used to call him Crazy Doc because he was a little on the edge. He said, Anthony, I might have something for you. Doc, what do you have? He said, Doc Rosenfeld said, I got two really good friends, and they're getting ready to make a movie, and they might have a part for you. And I said, Doc, I've never acted. I mean, you know. He says, no, really. He goes, and he gave me their numbers. And at that time, I didn't know who Irwin Winkler and Bob Chardoff were. You know, so he goes, go here. They want to see you. So I go to their office, and I'm walking in. There's Raging Bull posters and Rocky posters and all these big-time movies. But I walk into the conference room, and they're sitting there. They each have a script. And there's an extra script, so they asked me to read a couple lines, and I did that, and they said thank you, and I left. About a month goes by, and I figured I blew that one. I didn't get the part. So it was a Tuesday morning. I get a phone call, and it's the casting director for the movie. And they said, can you be in San Francisco on Saturday morning? We're starting to film the movie. And I go, so I got the part? And they said, nobody called you. And I said, no. And they said, you are a member of SAG, right? And I said, no. They said, I'll call you right back. So a few minutes later, they called back, and they said, we need you to show up at this, you know, the SAG office Thursday morning, certain time. You pay initiation fee, fill out an application, and you'll be a SAG member. And then he says, you want the part? And I said, oh, you bet. So I went, filled it out. I became a SAG member, and Didi and I and Michael flew up to San Francisco for a week. And it was a blast. I tell you what, I didn't realize how big the movie was at the time, but I got to, you know, interact with Ed Harris and Scott Glenn and all the guys, you know, going back and forth. And course got to meet a lot of the other actors and actresses that would film at the desert for the desert scenes. And but if you remember, I did have long hair coming to Cincinnati, and that was my second year. I didn't completely have it cut down, so I show up on the set and they said, well, you got to go see you know, the costume and you know, makeup and stuff. And I'm thinking, you gotta be kidding. And I sit down and they drape the big sheet on me, and they pull out the clippers and they start it up, and I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, this movie took place like a long time ago, and they had short hair. And she just starts going, and I'm thinking, oh, well. But, you know, it was worth it. So I had a pretty short haircut in the movie, but it was fun.
All right, final fun fact with Anthony Munoz, and I really appreciate your time. Ted Williams famously said, when I walk down the street, I want people to go, there goes the best hitter that ever lived. You are frequently referred to as the greatest offensive lineman that's ever played this game. When you hear that, how does it make you feel?
Well, it still makes me pinch myself. It's still very humbling. And, you know, when I hear that, it's like, man, how great is that? I wouldn't mind just being mentioned with, you know, the Forrest Greggs and the Art Shells and the Jim Parkers. And when I hear that, it's amazing because of what we just talked about in my college career. And people had said I'd never play again after that Rose Bowl. People said that there's no way I would last this season. And the fact that I played 13 years and didn't miss a game until my 11th year. And to have people say that, it's humbling. But it really goes to show that if you don't listen to the naysayers and you still have a passion and desire in your heart and you just bust your tail, that good things happen.
That's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Horde, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.